Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah.
So our mobile networks, they're getting really software heavy, right? Which is great for flexibility, new features, all that stuff.
Definitely. Huge potential unlocked.
But it also seems to swing the door wide open for, new kinds of security headaches, new vulnerabilities.
That's exactly it. The shift to virtualization, softwarization. It offers agility, yeah, but it inherently adds layers of complexity, and that means new potential attack surfaces.
So today, we're really diving deep into some of the cutting-edge research, looking at how we find these weaknesses in 5G and maybe even next G before the bad guys do. We're looking at how scientists are trying to think like attackers.
Exactly. And we're focusing on some really interesting academic work using novel fuzzing techniques.
Fuzzing, right?
Okay.
Basically throwing weird, unexpected stuff at the system to see if it breaks.
Pretty much. Think of it like stress testing, but with unexpected digital curveballs, specifically tailored for these advanced mobile network technologies.
Okay, let's jump into the first paper then. It's called Systematic Meets Unintended: Prior Knowledge Adaptive 5G Vulnerability Detection Via Multi-Fuzzing. Long title.
Yeah, but the core idea is important. They argue that a lot of current 5G security research is maybe too focused, like looking at very specific issues, but not really taking a holistic, big picture view of all the potential weak spots.
Right, missing the forest for the trees, maybe. So what's their solution?
Well, they propose this novel systematic fuzzing approach. And what's cool is that it adapts based on how much an attacker might actually know about the system.
Adapts, how so?
It uses different strategies depending on the assumed knowledge level. Plus, they use a digital twin platform.
A digital twin, like a virtual copy of the network.
Exactly. A replica where they can safely test things out, run fuzzing attacks, and even simulate defenses without messing with a live network. Super useful.
That does sound powerful. Okay, so they have three fuzzing strategies. First up is listen and learn, LAL. Sounds like a black box thing. No prior knowledge needed.
That's right, completely black box. It doesn't know the 5G protocols beforehand. It just, well, listens to legitimate network messages being exchanged.
Okay, it eavesdrops.
And then it replays those messages, but it swaps out certain commands, makes little changes. It learns by seeing what normal looks like, and then introduces variations to try and trigger a fault.
And did it work? The paper mentioned some pretty striking numbers.
Oh, yeah. Quite effective. They said it uncovered 129 vulnerabilities just in the RFC, that's the Radio Resource Control Connection process.
Wow, 129. And quickly too, right? Like
Right.
0.07 seconds on average. That's incredibly fast.
Blindingly fast. It really tells you that even these fundamental connection procedures, things you'd assume are rock solid, can have hidden flaws, flaws that maybe traditional testing misses.
Okay, strategy number two, synchronize and learn,
Good.
or SIAL. Also black box, but sounds different, more refined.
It is still black box, but it incorporates bits of information an attacker might actually have, maybe some user details they could access, and it uses probability-based fuzzing.
Probability-based.
Yeah.
So, less random guessing, more targeted.
Exactly. Instead of just throwing completely random stuff, it learns which types of changes seem more likely to cause interesting results, either successful connections or, crucially, failures. So the algorithm figures out, based on probability, which command replacements have been, let's say, more productive in the past, and focuses its efforts there. Better precision, better recall, fewer attempts needed.
Smarter fuzzing, basically. Learning from its own tests. Got it. Then the third one, source and learn, SOADO. This is white box, so they do have inside knowledge.
Correct. White box means they have access to the source code, or at least detailed internal information. So AOL goes deeper, manipulating specific bits within the protocol messages.
Bits, like flipping individual zeros and ones.
Pretty much. This lets them not only find bugs, but really understand why they happen at a very low level. And using this, they found three quite serious man-in-the-middle vulnerabilities.
Man in the middle. That sounds bad.
It is. Because these vulnerabilities apparently stemmed from weaknesses in the actual 5G protocol design itself, not just a coding mistake. That points to potential architectural issues.
Yikes. Okay. The paper also talks about these weird states, legal and invalid, neither success nor failure.
Yeah, that's a key insight. These are states in the RSC protocol where the connection hasn't clearly succeeded, but it hasn't been explicitly rejected either. It's a kind of gray zone.
A gray zone. So they might slip past normal checks.
Potentially, yes. They aren't flagged as obvious errors, but they can still lead to unexpected behavior, maybe something exploitable. Think of them as these weird edge cases that standard testing might just miss.
Right, those tricky unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they try to predict or avoid these risky states? Something about probability maps.
Yes, state transaction probability maps. By tracking how the protocol moves between different internal states during all their fuzzing tests, they build up a statistical picture.
Like mapping out the common pathways.
Kind of, more like mapping out the dangerous pathways. They identified specific sequences of state changes transactions that very strongly correlate with connection failures.
And they found some specific high-risk ones.
They did. 7 high-risk state transaction cases that almost only showed up in failed connections. In fact, over 70% of the failed connections they observed included at least one of these risky transactions.
Okay, so identifying those patterns gives you some predictive power. But 70% isn't perfect.
Exactly. That rule-based prediction based on those transactions gives you about 70.54% recall, which is good, but they wanted better reliability and earlier warnings.
So they brought in machine learning.
Uh-huh. They introduced an LSTM-based vulnerability prediction model. LSTM stands for long short-term memory. It's a type of neural network that's really good at analyzing sequences over time, like the sequence of states in a connection attempt.
Using AI to predict connection failures in real time. That's pretty advanced stuff. How well did it work?
The results were quite striking. Just by looking at the first 10 steps, or states, in the connection process, the LSTM model achieved an 89% AUC.
AUC, area under curve. Basically a measure of how good it is at predicting.
Right. Closer to 100% is better. And even more impressively, analyzing just the first 0.08 seconds gave them 96% AUC.
Wow, 0.08 seconds.
Yeah, and on average, this prediction happened with an accuracy of 89%, cutting off the analysis after just 0.072 seconds. This gives the network an average of almost 3.5 seconds of lead time to react.
3.5 seconds. That's enough time to potentially reroute traffic or block something. A proactive defense.
That's the idea. Shifting from just reacting to attacks to actually anticipating and preventing them based on these early warning signs.
A real game changer if it works reliably.
Yeah.
Did they mention any cases where it got things wrong? False alarms?
They did note one specific edge case. If the base station, the GMB, sent 3 paging messages very early on within those first 10 states, the model sometimes flagged it as a likely failure even when it wasn't.
Ah, okay. So the AI still needs some fine tuning to understand all the normal network chatter.
Precisely. These models are powerful, but you need to train them carefully to avoid crying wolf. But overall, the potential seems huge.
And they think this approach could be used more broadly, beyond just RRC.
Absolutely. They're optimistic it can scale to other 5G platforms, other protocols, real-time detection, proactive defense. It's a big step forward.
Okay, let's switch gears. Paper number 2, BaseSafe, baseband sanitized fuzzing through emulation. This shifts focus to the baseband, right? The phone's radio brain.
Exactly, the cellular baseband. And it's a critical area because, as they point out, it processes a lot of data from the network before your phone is even fully authenticated.
Before authentication, so an attacker could potentially target it early on.
Yes, it makes it a really stealthy vector. And adding to the challenge, baseband firmware is often super proprietary. Vendors keep it locked down, so there's historically been less public security research compared to, say, the main operating system. It's a bit of a black box for many researchers.
Hidden and potentially risky. So how does BaseSafe try to tackle this?
BaseSafe is a framework they build specifically for fuzzing these basebands. The key idea is something called partial rehosting.
Rehosting.
Yeah, they take parts of the baseband firmware, the message parsers, for instance, and run them in a controlled environment off the actual phone, usually in an emulator.
Ah, so you don't need the physical phone hardware for every test run.
Right. This allows for much faster instrumented fuzzing. You can analyze what's happening inside much more easily, even if the original firmware is closed source, which it often is.
Makes sense. And they mentioned something about sanitizing.
Uh-huh. They developed a special memory allocator. They call it a sanitizing drop-in allocator. It's designed to specifically catch heap-based buffer overflows, which are a common and dangerous type of memory bug in CC++ code, often found in firmware.
So faster fuzzing, better bug detection, even for closed systems. How did they test it?
They built a proof of concept targeting a specific MediaTek baseband, one that runs Nucleus RTOS. This baseband is known to be reachable by rogue base stations, so it's a realistic target.
And the speeds.
Pretty impressive. They were hitting hundreds of executions per second per CPU core. Scaling that up, they estimated around 15,000 test cases per second overall.
15,000. How do they get that kind of speed with emulation? Emulation to be slow.
Good question. They use the Unicorn emulator, which is known for being lightweight, but they also heavily optimized the process. They integrated it tightly with AFL Plus, a popular fuzzer, using a specific API.
Okay.
And crucially, they implemented clever techniques like using AlphaFork server start. This lets them create a snapshot of the emulator's state before running a test case and then rapidly reset to that snapshot for the next test, avoiding the overhead of restarting the whole emulation each time.
Like hitting a quick reset button in a game.
Exactly. They also improved Unicorn's JIT just-in-time compiler speed with a custom caching mechanism inspired by how AFL works with the QEMU emulator, but they made it even faster. It's all about minimizing the overhead of each fuzzing iteration.
Very clever engineering. And what about when it does find a crash? They mentioned a debug mode.
Yeah, that's vital for analysis. When a crash occurs, the debug mode captures a detailed trace of the execution path leading up to it, the instructions executed, register values, etc. Makes it much easier for a researcher to figure out the root cause of the vulnerability.
The paper says they focused on LTE, RRC, and EMM messages. We heard about RRC earlier. Why EMM too?
EMM stands for EPS Mobility Management. Like RRC, these messages are exchanged very early in the connection process, often before full authentication and encryption are established.
Ah, so targeting that same pre-authentication window.
Precisely. Vulnerabilities here are particularly dangerous because they could be exploited by anyone within radio range setting up a fake base station, potentially without needing any credentials.
Makes sense. They also found code similarities across different MediaTek chips.
Yeah.
Even RM versus MS.
Yeah, that was interesting. Their proof of concept used an ARM-based chip, but analysis showed similar parser code in MIPS-based versions, too. It suggests significant code reuse by the vendor.
Which means a bug found in one might affect many others.
Potentially, yes. Good for developers, maybe, but it amplifies the impact if a vulnerability is discovered.
They also talked about internal layer messages, or ILMs, and specific memory functions. Sounds very technical.
It is, but it's key to how they target the fuzzing. ILMs are how different software components within the baseband talk to each other, and the functions they list, like constructive peer buff, freeint local para, these are the functions used to manage the memory buffers for those messages.
So prime targets for memory corruption bugs.
Exactly. If you can make one of those functions misbehave through a malformed message, you might trigger a buffer overflow or some other memory error. That's where their custom allocator and the unicorn hooks come in.
Right, the sanitizer hooks. How do they work?
BaseSafe uses Unicorn's ability to insert checks or hooks around memory accesses. Their custom allocator works with these hooks to watch memory operations within the emulated baseband. If the code tries to read or write outside the bounds of an allocated buffer, the hook triggers and BaseSafe flags it as a potential vulnerability. Catches the bug right when it happens.
Very neat. What about future work for BaseSafe? Where are they headed?
They have several plans. They want to expand beyond just crashes and memory corruption to find logic bugs.
Logic bugs.
Things like tricking the baseband into disabling security timers or maybe bypassing authentication checks entirely. These are often subtler than crashes. They also want to improve coverage tracking, maybe expand to other basebands, even older 2G stuff, and automate more of the setup using static analysis.
Using a solid roadmap. Overall, BaseSafe sounds like a big step for baseband security.
I think so. The combination of speed, high coverage through emulation, and that effective sanitizing allocator really proved its worth by finding actual real...
Okay, let's broaden the view a bit with our third source. This one's a presentation slide deck. Security testing of network protocol implementations. More general fuzzing context here.
Exactly. It steps back and looks at the general challenges, especially with stateful protocols. That's where the system's behavior depends not just on the last message, but the whole history, the sequence of interactions. The state matters.
Like the context is everything.
Yeah.
And fuzzing, as defined here, is that core idea. Throw unexpected stuff. Look for crashes or weird behavior.
Precisely. The SUT system under test is the protocol implementation you care about, and the test harness is the tool sending the potentially broken messages. It's all about finding bugs caused by mishandling inputs the developers didn't anticipate.
And it works, right? The presentation gives some big examples.
Oh, yeah. Google finding thousands of bugs in Chrome and open source projects. Microsoft saving millions with their Sage Fuzzer, finding bugs in Windows 7 before release. It clearly demonstrates fuzzing is a practical, high-impact technique.
Now, the presentation mentions coverage-guided fuzzing, like AFL uses. How does that make fuzzing smarter?
Instead of pure random input, coverage guidance monitors which parts of the code get executed by each test input. AFL specifically tracks branch coverage, basically, which way decisions go in the code.
So it knows if an input made the program do something new.
Exactly. If an input hits a new branch, explores a previously unseen part of the code, AFL considers it interesting. It saves that input and uses it as a base for future mutations. It's trying to systematically explore all the code paths, not just wander randomly, though it tracks which branches are hit, not necessarily the full sequence.
Got it. Explore. Don't just guess. What about grammar-based fuzzing? Peach Fuzzer is mentioned.
Grammar-based fuzzing is more structured. You provide the fuzzer with a definition, a grammar, of the protocol you're testing, often in XML.
So you tell it what a valid message should look like.
Right. Then the fuzzer uses that grammar to generate inputs that are syntactically correct, but it intelligently mutates specific fields or values within that structure. It's good for complex protocols where totally random data might just get rejected immediately without reaching deeper code paths.
And then there's model-based testing. This sounds different, again, focused on logic flaws.
Yeah, this aims higher than just finding crashes. You create an abstract model of how the protocol should behave according to its specification.
Like a set of rules for correct behavior.
Pretty much. Then you generate tests to see if the actual implementation follows those rules. Does it end up in the expected state after a certain sequence of messages? They mentioned success finding subtle bugs in TLS and Wi-Fi this way. Their example involved modeling a handshake and then generating tests that mess with the message sequence, dropping, injecting, repeating messages to see if the outcome matches the model's prediction. It's about verifying correctness.
Okay, checking the logic, not just the robustness. Let's quickly revisit BaseSafe for a visual. We have a figure showing the MediaTek baseband architecture.
Yeah, figure 2 from their paper. It really lays out the layers. You see the Nucleus OS at the bottom, then the MediaTek abstraction layer, drivers for SIM, memory, etc. Then layer 1 for the air interface, and stacked on top, all those protocol layers, LTE, RRC, MMGMM, EMM, and others. It shows you just how much software is running on that little chip.
Definitely complex. And there's also listing 1, the alpha's function signature in Rust.
Yeah.
What does that show us?
It gives a peek under the hood at how BaseSafe integrates with AFL++ and Unicorn. You see those callbacks, like input placement callback, that tells BaseSafe where to inject the fuzz data into the emulator's memory. And crash validation callback, that's how BaseSafe checks the result after running the code to see if a crash or sanitization error occurred, signaling a find to AFL. It shows the plumbing connecting the fuzzer to the emulated target.
Right, the technical glue holding it together. Okay, fifth source. PDF, an automated black box equivalence testing framework for LTE QT. Titles in Chinese, papers English. This is the DaiQ framework. What's its goal?
DaiQ is about checking if different LTE implementations behave consistently, specifically looking at NAS and RRC layers again. It uses formal methods, a model checker called NECMMV, to perform equivalence checking on their finite state machines, FSMs.
FSM equivalence. So checking if different devices follow the same state transition rules. How they test that?
They took an open source LTE stack, SRS LTE, and modified its NAS and RRC state machines. Then they built an adapter to send network packets to real phones and compared the phone's responses and state changes to their modified SRS LTE baseline.
Comparing real phones against a reference model.
Essentially, yeah. They send the same test sequences, they call them membership and equivalence queries, to different phones and see if they react the same way as the reference.
And table 2 shows some results. Different phones behave differently.
Yeah, exactly. Table 2 lists tests on various phones, Pixel, Huawei, Xiaomi, iPhone, etc. They found inconsistencies. For example, some phones wrongly accepted replay GUTI reallocation messages in certain scenarios. Others handled plain text authentication requests differently after security should have been active. It highlights that implementations aren't always consistent,
which could lead to bugs or security issues depending on which phone you have. Okay, final source. PDF HFuzz towards automatic fuzzing testing of NB-IoT core network protocols implementations. focusing on narrowband IoT this time.
Right. HFuzz is a gray box fuzzer. It has some internal knowledge specifically for NB-IoT core network protocols. NB-IoT is for those low-power, wide-area devices. HFuzz targets protocols with what they call complex frame structures.
Complex frames, meaning nested data, lots of layers.
Yeah, messages with multiple information elements nested within each other, maybe several levels deep. They use GTPv2's create session request as an example. These can be tricky for simple fuzzers.
So how does HFuzz handle that complexity?
It uses a message structure tree, or MST. It builds a tree representing the message structure based on the protocol's format rules.
A tree structure.
Yeah.
Like a hierarchical map of the message.
Exactly. This allows the fuzzer's mutator component to make changes in a way that respects the hierarchy. It can target specific fields deep within the nested structure. Then there's a monitor for coverage and a sender.
How does it build this MST? Does it need the full protocol spec?
It decomposes the raw binary data based on the known rule or format. Then it can serialize the modified tree back to binary to send. What's neat is they say it can still generate a useful MST even with only partial format knowledge. It makes the best use of what it knows.
And it uses coverage feedback too.
Yes. Standard gray box technique. It uses basic block coverage to see which parts of the code are hit. It prioritizes mutating parts of the MST, positive hierarchies, that lead to new coverage.
And they enhance this.
Uh-huh. They added logic to ignore meaningless basic blocks, ones that always run, or are simple error handlers triggered by almost any bad input. This focuses the fuzzing effort better.
How did HFuzz perform compared to others, like AFL or Peach?
They tested it on Open Air Interface, OAI, and a commercial NB-IoT core network, specifically fuzzing that complex GTPv2 message. The results, shown in their figures, indicate that the enhanced HFuzz achieved higher basic block coverage and got there faster than AFL or Peach.
So that structural awareness from the MST really helps.
That seems to be the conclusion. The MST helps HFuzz generate more valid structure-aware inputs early on, which leads to exploring deeper code paths faster, especially for these complex hierarchical protocols. And the enhanced algorithm fine-tunes it further.
Wow. Okay, that was a really deep dive into some fascinating security research for these next-gen networks. We've covered a lot, from multi-strategy fuzzing to baseband emulation and these structure-aware techniques.
Absolutely. It really underscores how important robust, sophisticated testing is becoming as these networks get more complex and software-driven. Proactively finding vulnerabilities, even predicting them, is becoming crucial.
The innovation in fuzzing techniques we saw today, adapting to attacker knowledge, using emulation, understanding protocol state and structure, it's all incredibly promising for making things more secure.
Definitely. These efforts are vital if we want reliable, trustworthy mobile communication systems going forward.
It really feels like these researchers are working hard to stay ahead of potential threats.
They are. And, you know, looking at how fast mobile tech evolves, it really brings up a final thought for you, our listener. Given this rapid evolution, how do we make sure these advanced fuzzing techniques can keep up? How do we adapt and scale them to handle the security challenges and the sheer complexity of whatever comes after 5G, the protocols we haven't even designed yet?
That's a big question. Something to definitely mull over. A challenge for the future.